Welcome to the Where Do Gays Retire podcast, where we help you in the LGBTQ plus community find a safe and affordable retirement place. Join Mark Goldstein as he interviews others who live in gay-friendly places around the globe. Learn about the climate, cost of living, healthcare, crime and safety, and more. Now, here's your host, Mark Goldstein.
Today, we travel to Dordogne, France, with our guest, Kevin Pollack. We'll tell you a little bit about Kevin now. Kevin's originally from New York, but lived the last 20 or so years in the Phoenix area, small world, with stops in Virginia and Florida in between. The vast majority of his career was based in land development and real estate management. The firm he worked for assisted developers in building large-scale master plan communities, golf course communities, and etc. Aside from consulting with his developers, he also managed the asset after it was built, providing long-term partnerships to help maintain his vision. His last position with the company was the executive director at Desert Mountain in Scottsdale, Arizona. In 2021, his husband and he decided to sell their home and most of their belongings and move to Europe. It's a big move. They initially chose Portugal as their destination, but after some scouting, they decided France was a better fit. At first, they arrived in the south of France, Côte d'Azur, but ultimately decided the French countryside was a better fit. The charm of the small villages, the markets, vineyards, and the slower pace of life was the biggest factor. Additionally, having brought their small dog, life was not the best option in the city. He's currently renting a small house in the village of, Beauregard-et-Bassac. Is that pretty good?
That's correct, yes.
I'm surprised. Which is between cities, oh, here we go, of Bergerac and Père Igeot, about 1.5 hours east of Bordeaux. And while he was retired from his career in land development, he has taken on some part-time marketing work for an English company based in France. Well, thank you for coming and welcome to the podcast, Kevin. We do appreciate your joining us today.
Thank you, Mark. It's a pleasure.
Thank you. And so let's start off. Tell us your story. How did you decide on Dordogne, France? And tell us a little bit about the background and, you know, how and why you chose this city.
Well, in the dream was always, for me, was a country cottage. And I had this vision of a stone cottage with, you know, a little bit of land and having the dog and maybe a little B&B and meeting people from all over. And so while that was always the dream, the city life also, and the art and the culture of certain cities in France was also a draw. But after having visited a number of cities, city life just wasn't something that I wanted to do full time. And after a number of stops in several towns and villages along the way, the Dordogne is everything that I could have wanted. It's vineyards, it's castles, it's small, charming little villages, it's farmers markets every day of the week in different villages. The weather is great, and the people are nice. Is that there is a large English speaking population here, which helps.
Definitely helps.
And it's just a lovely part of the country. If you've never been to this part of France, you're missing out. It's lovely.
So yeah, it sounds a little bit different than Phoenix. That's for sure.
It is much different from Phoenix, and having four seasons again after many, many years of living in Phoenix and Florida has been really, really great. I didn't mind the winter. It really wasn't terrible here.
I think we're running parallel lives here. So we both lived in New York. Yeah. We both moved to Florida. We both moved from, well, I think you moved from Florida to Phoenix.
I did, yes. Yeah.
Jackson, so did I.
Yeah, Jacksonville.
Yep, so did we. So we lived in Tampa. We tried Florida, wasn't for us, moved to Phoenix. And here we are in Phoenix, and we haven't moved to Europe. But yeah, we're pretty parallel in that respect.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So what made you decide upon Europe? Like, you were living in Phoenix, right? And you just...
It was always a dream to live in Europe. I was a bit wanderlust as a young man. I traveled all over the world. I was one of these backpacking fellas in Africa and Central America and South America and Europe. And I always just, there's a certain charm about Europe. And additionally, it's easy to get to a lot of places from here. You can get to India and Africa and any place in Europe relatively easy, and to the East Coast of New York, where my family is from, without really much of a problem. So it felt like just a perfect fit location-wise. And,
right.
You know, work was stressful, and like it is for many people. And I decided to move up a retirement a number of years. After I turned 50, as many people do, you start thinking about your life and mortality and all those things.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, why not now? Now is the best time to do it. I've got the energy. I've got a little bit of money. And COVID assisted in prioritizing what was important in life for me. And so we just took a dive.
That's great. That is wonderful. I love to hear those stories. So tell us geographically, where is Dordogne located within France?
Yeah, so most people obviously know where Paris is, and we're about, I don't know the mileage, but we're a 2-hour train ride to Bordeaux on the fast train that doesn't stop, and then maybe about an hour to the east on another local train. So I could get from the town of Bergerac, which is about 10 minutes south of me, into Bordeaux in about an hour, and then another 2 hours, maybe give or take a few minutes to change trains to Paris in three. So give it 3.5 hours from Paris by train, and maybe 7 hours by car, depending on how fast you drive.
That's awesome. I know France has Europe itself has a great rail system. And in fact, I just read today that, and we'll get into transportation a little bit later, but I read today that France is stopping local flights within France in favor of rail. So in other words, they're going to stop having flights, local flights, and instead you have to, use the rail and take the rail. I think that's great.
Yeah, that's correct. The only it's within a certain distance and time. You would only be able to do the shorter flights if it was if you were flying to Paris to catch a flight to the States.
Connection.
So if it was a connection, correct. But yes, they are very serious about the rail travel here. And it's one of the best in the world. It connects. I mean, you can get just about anywhere in France by train. Just about.
Yeah. And it cuts down on pollution. That's for sure.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's very important. Okay. So is living in an LGBT community important to you? And does that exist where you are? I wouldn't kind of think so, since you're out in.
Right.
In a rural area?
Well, personally, no. It wasn't a really big draw for me. I wasn't a big participant, if you will, in that type of activity. Now, bars and clubs, it never was something that interested me. And so here, where I am, is very rural. There are only 60 people that live in my village. And so... I can't say I'm most certainly the only gay fella here, but I would assume that I am, which is perfectly fine. But the area itself lends to a very diverse group of people from all over the world. And because we have art and we have culture and we have wine and we have food and we have hiking and biking and all these other things. There are plenty of gay people that live out here. I've made, you know, a nice group of friends that are relatively local, which has been lovely. But you're not going to find a
gay bar.
No, you're not going to find a gay bar. No, not where I am. Not at all.
Right.
But the interesting thing about France is it's very, very, nobody cares. Old people, young people, it doesn't matter. They're very, I don't know if the word is private, but there is a respectfulness to people's personal lives that I have found here in France. And you can introduce, oh, this is my husband, to the local farmer who lives right across the street, and he's not going to look at you any differently. He's not going to act any differently. I haven't had one instance of unfavorable interaction in France at all. Not one.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. That's the way it should be, Kevin.
Of course. Of course.
I mean, that's really the way it should be anywhere. I mean, we were talking earlier at a previous podcast about how comfortable Provincetown is, mm-hmm. because it's a big, it's like almost 100% gay there. But you feel comfortable there, but you should feel the way it should be. You should be able to feel comfortable everywhere. But unfortunately.
Right. I mean, I agree with that 100%. And that was also another reason for choosing France in general. They've been very progressive with their politics, with marriage equality, with adoption, all the talking points. They have been out in front of the United States on all those matters. And obviously, when you go to the cities, Paris, Bordeaux, Lyon, Nice, Marseille, any of these major cities, you're going to have a very big, open gay community. You're going to find your tribe, no doubt.
Right.
But even out here, where I am, with, for an example, before I moved here, we stayed in a little guest house with an quote unquote old couple in their 80s in the country, and they invited us everywhere, to their friends. They helped us with bureaucratic issues that we were having with, because our French isn't great. And so there was never a time when we felt we couldn't be ourselves, where we had to act any differently than we normally would act. And so that's been a really lovely thing, particularly, when I watch the news about, what's happening in the United States. It's a very sad state of affairs. And so not having to deal with that here is a nice thing.
Right. So talking about equality, and so they recognize same-sex marriage there. Mm-hmm. They probably have all the anti-discrimination laws.
Correct. Yes, they do.
In place. Yes. So it's really a lovely place to be.
It is.
And what I remember, though, years ago, there was this stigma between the U.S. and France. Like, I don't know, there was this something there that they said, oh, the French weren't open or acceptable, or they didn't like U.S., people from the United States. What is that all? Is that true at all? Or?
Well, I would say that it's not true. In my experience, I haven't had anybody, when I introduce myself as an American, I certainly don't get any sour looks. Now, I would say that what many people know and have heard over the years, if you don't speak the language, you should try to speak the language. You should be respectful that you are, speaking with someone who might not know English. Paris might be a little bit different, but I also compare that to New York City, right? You go to New York City, you're going to get, hey, buddy, get out of my way, right?
Right.
It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Tourists, right. Anyway. So I take Paris out of the equation because it just is it's a massive city where 90% of people who tour in France go to. When you come to the countryside, people are really lovely. I found that the people who, when I start speaking French poorly, I get more smiles from people than I would if I started in English. And I understand that I feel that the French who don't speak very good English are as nervous and they feel bad about not being able to speak English.
And so communicate with you.
So they go back to French. And so I would say that stereotype about the French not caring or thinking that the Americans, I wouldn't say that that's true. But like any place, if you go into anybody's country and you announce yourself as an American, and this is how we do things in America, and I want it the way it is in America, you're going to get a sour look.
Right.
And you might not be treated great. So don't do that.
Right. You have to be respectful. Right. You have to realize, okay, I'm in your country now. Now I'm the immigrant. So, you know,
it's part of the adventure for me. It really, really is there's different things in the grocery stores. There's different types of things to buy. I can't find the exact sneakers that I want to buy. Well, I need to get over that. Instead of complaining about it or saying, you know, I can get these at any store in the United States.
Right. Amazon.
I just simply can't. So I move on from there, and it's just part of the experience, which I'm enjoying.
That's good. That's good. Yeah. And it's a great experience. It's a great adventure doing that. Because everything is new and you're like, oh, they do it this way. And it's just a different culture, which is
absolutely
learning about the culture is great.
It is.
So I'm definitely all for that. Is it easy to meet people? I know you live in a village of 60 people. I wonder if everybody knows each other because it's so small.
Yes. I stand out simply because the people who live, at least in this village, there's not a lot of transient movement. So my nearest neighbor, Michelle, who's a widowed fella in his 70s, has lived in a house for 50 years. He lived there with his wife, is a lovely fella. We share an apéritif from time to time. Whiskey, he likes whiskey, so I would invite him down. His English is not very good. My French is not very good, but we make do. And so yeah, the how do you meet people? You have to really try. If I stay in the house, it's not going to happen. And so right. I have met people mostly online through maybe like a Facebook group, and then I've connected like expat groups. There are some other ones that maybe aren't on Facebook, Instagram. So maybe starting some type of conversation with someone who is local, and then it turns into, well, you know, you want to have a coffee. Or there are a lot of couples that we've met here that are looking for the same thing. They're looking for a tribe. They're looking for like-minded people. And if you're a wallflower, it's not, you're going to sit at home.
Right.
You're not going to make a lot of friends, but the expat community is quite vast. And so markets are a great place, going to the local markets and sitting in cafes, overhearing someone speaking English. Oh, it's, you know, this is, I'm Kevin. You know,
I'm from, right.
Right. And if you, you know, if you hear the American accent, then you can start. And I've met people that way. I would never have done that in the United States. I would never have just blindly started speaking to someone next to me in a Starbucks or something like that. But here, especially the cafe culture is so lovely. It's one of my favorite things to do. And the sort of the art of doing nothing is what they do here. Sitting in a cafe for 2 hours is not doing nothing. It's sitting in a cafe. It's enjoying your friends,
life.
it's just enjoying people walking by.
Yep.
I have the dog too helps. So dog people will gravitate to dog people. So if if you're in a park walking a dog or in a cafe, or and you can take the dog everywhere, into shops, into restaurants. And so having that interaction helps as well.
Yeah, dogs are magnets.
Yes.
I'm not going to say it, but you know the saying. But they are magnets, so, and they bring people together.
They
certainly do. But yeah, I love the cafe culture, even here, which is nothing like it is in France, I know. But yeah, I'm looking forward to making parts of France my future destination, as far as at least visiting. So I'm really looking forward to it. Maybe we'll meet someday. Haven't met in New York. We haven't met in Phoenix. Maybe we'll meet in France.
Or Florida. So.
Or Florida.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
so there's still a chance.
Yes, of course.
And so we talked about the language, and that's pretty, that's pretty understandable that, you each try to speak. Are you taking classes, by the way?
Yeah. So I do take classes, and they are online, but I'm thinking about switching just because the first year here was really, I don't want to say chaotic, but it was very, very busy finding the place, settling in, going through all the processes that you need to go through when you leave your country and you move to another one. And now that I'm past my year mark and I've accomplished healthcare and driver's license and visa renewals and these types of things and housing, now I can really spend a little bit more time with the language, which is very, very important to me. I want to be better at the language, but it is difficult. Just structurally, it's difficult. They have masculine and feminine, which we don't have. They put the pronouns before where we're after. There are things that sound exactly the same but mean wildly different things. And then, of course, the French speak very, very quickly. And just like we do, I'm trying to speak slowly, but I can mumble. When I speak, I can speak very quickly, and so when you have a number of French people all speaking over each other and very quickly, it could be very, very challenging to communicate. I'm better at speaking than I am listening, and I'm much better at reading than I am at anything. So I can get by reading very, very well. It's when a French person starts speaking to me quickly,
I won't understand.
I have to, plus lentement pour moi, slowly for me.
And that's pretty good.
And you go. I've got a very good. I'm really good at the basics. It's all the nuances that have become much more challenging, and that's I've only been here a year, so I've come a long way in 1 year. In another year, I'll be better. In another year after that, I'll be better. I'm positive of it because it's a very, very important part of being here for me.
So what apps are you using right now? Just out of curiosity.
Babbel is the one that I really like because you can go through all sorts of programs on the Babbel, but they also do online classes. And the online classes are usually very small, two or three people, maybe four people, and they're subject related. So I took a class last week was on directions and like where you're from. So everything about getting somewhere, how to get somewhere, where you're from, where, all that conversation, which is nice. So I can just focus on one subject.
Right.
I've got the pleasantries down, so that I don't need anymore. Now I'm into more of the nuances. And again, the structure of the French language can be very, very challenging to an English-speaking person because it makes no sense structurally.
Right.
You say, I want it. Here they say, I it want. Ooh. Right? They put the it before the want. And so when you're trying to put that into a sentence with other words, obviously, it takes a lot of bandwidth in your head. And then, then you stumble through. So I practice a lot in my head before I go into a shop or What am I going to say? What am I going to say? What am I going to say? And I get it out. But then what happens is that they answer you very quickly. And I only heard two or three words that I recognize out of the 30. Right?
Yeah.
And so please slow down if you can.
Yep. My husband is studying Spanish for our upcoming trip to Spain. So he wants to focus on conversational, like, what do I do when I go to a restaurant?
Right.
And try to order something or ask for a table, for two.
Right.
So he's trying that. So
those are the things that every person should know in their first year of living abroad, all those types of things, and learning the most common verbs is, to have, to want, to be, to eat, to go. All of those types of verbs are really, really important, to take, to bring, and, like mastering those, mm-hmm. because you can use them in any situation. And maybe it doesn't sound exactly the way you want it to, but I can use to make or to do for a lot of things that maybe I wouldn't use those particular verbs in English, but I can use them in French, and it makes enough sense to get by at this level. So
I took French in eighth grade. So trying to learn Spanish, sometimes I'm thinking of French words and I'm like, I'm pretty good with the French accent. I think, but I have no idea what I'm saying. Like, I can say, I know what, like, the basics are, like, très bien, and stuff like that, and je m'appelle Marc, or something like that. But, okay. So, Kevin, tell us about the local economy. Can you provide examples? What does housing cost in a town like yours, as opposed to maybe a bigger city? Tell us about utility bills too and what that entails.
So one of the challenges in coming here, and this is something that a lot of Americans will have, they'll understand this, is the holiday makers, the vacation people. Obviously France is very popular. And so people who own homes who want to rent them will make as much money in July and August renting out their home than they could the entire year. So there can be challenges in finding good rentals because they don't want to deal with that. There's also in France, the tenant has all of the power in that relationship. The owner of a home cannot evict a tenant between October and March. They can't. So if someone decides that they're going to rent their house out for a year, this time we're talking rentals, of course, and they don't pay between October and March, there's nothing that you can do about it because it's winter time and they do not evict people in the winter. And then getting them out in March could be a hassle. So there are many people that want to just rent out their home or their flat, their apartment, short term, make a lot of money and not deal with this potential hassle. So that was a challenge in finding the place because I am renting. This is a rental now because I wasn't exactly sure this would be the place. But the nice thing about where I am today is the owner has horses and they didn't want transient people coming in. They wanted one person for a year. So it's perfect for that. Rental costs if you're going to pay more than 1,000 euro a month, that's probably pretty high. You could pay more for a bigger house. But for an example, in the wintertime, I rented a home that was a 3-bedroom, 2-bath home, had a swimming pool, a lovely garden, and it was about 700 euro. Well, no, she was English, so it was 700 pounds, mm-hmm. which is, I don't know, $825 a month. That's pretty good for a for a 3-bedroom house. In the summer, it would go up significantly in the summer months. So you can find good quality housing, apartments. You know, if you're a couple that wants to just live in a city and have a 1-bedroom flat in, let's say, Bordeaux, I'd be shocked to know that you would spend more than 1,000 euro. It would be very, very surprising to me. And obviously, there will be some that would be more than that, depending on the finishings and that what. But you know, the French don't make as much money as the people in the United States simply don't.
Right.
And so the cost of housing is, I believe, is cheaper. Now, to buy, you can buy. It really just depends. Obviously, if you're in a big city and you want to buy a 3-bedroom flat in Bordeaux in the poshest of neighborhoods, you could spend several hundred thousand dollars easily, $1 million if it's a brand new place. But I've got friends here, for an example. I've got friends here that bought a cottage, and they bought there was a cottage next door, old ruin, that they wanted to buy in order to have a guest house and maybe rent it out if they wanted to, but it was just across their sort of courtyard. So they bought the cottage for 35,000 euro, which is about 40 some odd thousand dollars, 40, not even quite $45,000. And they're putting in 70,000 euro to renovate the cottage and add a pool, an in-ground pool. So it's a 2-bedroom, 2-bath cottage. It will have a lounge, so like a living room, and a brand new kitchen, dining area, lounge, 2 bedrooms, 2 bathrooms. Pool, garden. Square footage is probably 1,000, maybe 1,000 square feet. So not a great big house. Mm-hmm. But you're talking about a little over 110,000 euro, you know, in the country. They live in the country, so there's no walking to any stores.
Right.
It's a spectacular place. They live in they have the most beautiful view of the vineyards below them, and it's quiet and lovely, and they will probably be able to rent out their cottage in the summer for 1,500 euro a week with a pool.
Wow.
So they'll make their money back, you know, quickly.
So that 100,000, did that include that other portion of that was in ruins that they rebuilt?
So the cottage that they bought, when I say ruins, it was just, you know, it's 250 years old. The roof was actually pretty good. It wasn't a ruin where it was falling completely apart, but the entire inside needed to be upgraded. And so you can find gems out in the countryside. You can certainly find quality buildings to renovate. I would say that the French are behind the United States in terms of new housing that is, how do I say this without being, that's charming. The French seem to be very, very good at putting up just square boxes. Here's a new square box with no character. Just a box. And the reason for that is that the older homes, while charming and maybe renovated, if it's a 400-year-old cottage, and in the wintertime, it's going to feel like a 400-year-old cottage. It's going to be cold, even if you have heating. It's going to stay cold. It's going to have a dampness to it. It shouldn't have a dampness, but it's going to feel like an old cottage. So people here seem to want a more modern home, but you would think that they would build a modern home with the French, old French charm, which you don't see a lot of, unfortunately. That's what I would do. I would build a brand new home with the stones of an old cottage.
Yep. Right.
But you don't see that very often. You just see a stucco box and a garden a lot in some of these towns, which are efficient, which is a good thing because you asked the question about utilities. Utilities can be expensive. Electricity in France is expensive. I pay here, I have on like a monthly plan. It's 160 euro per month. So about $175. And at the end of the year, I'll either have to pay more or they'll give me back more, depending right. on my usage. I do have air conditioning here, which is not common. This house does have air conditioning. And it has a tumble dryer, which is also very uncommon.
Uncommon.
You just don't find dryers in
not in Europe.
I don't even use it. I love to hang the clothes out on the line
outside.
So my electricity bill, I think they set higher with the idea that the air conditioning and the tumble dryer would be used more often. So we'll see how it plans out.
So what's the climate like? Speaking of the utilities, what's the climate like? Does it snow or
do you get really hot? Yeah, we had a little bit of snow in the winter, not a little bit stuck on the ground, but not a lot. You get four really good distinct seasons here, which is lovely. I haven't had that since I grew up in New York. So almost 40 years. And the spring, I'll tell you, the spring has been spectacular. The flowers, the roses in the yard, the lilies, the fields are everything that you can imagine. The springtime French countryside, the wildflowers are spectacular. Winter can be rainy and foggy here in Dordogne. And I think more of like a Seattle or like a Northwest type of sort of a damp, raw cold, not freezing, not below mm-hmm. freezing. Very rare did it get below 30 Fahrenheit.
Right.
But in the 30s and in the 40s during the day, yes, absolutely. So a kind of a cold, raw, wet winter.
How about summers?
Summer can be hot. Last year, there were even some fires west of here. Today, we've had some new warm weather now. It was maybe 83 today, 82, 83. Now, a Phoenix fellow won't think that that's hot. It's a little humid.
That's cold.
It's a little humid. It's a little sticky. The air conditioning's not on. But that would be typical. So 80s during the summer, we'll get some 90s off and on when there's a heat wave. Last year, it got to 100, maybe a week's worth of that scattered about a couple of days of 100 degree heat, and then it went back down.
Is it humid? I would think it's humid.
Yeah, it's humid.
Anything is humid to me.
There's regular humidity. There's not Florida humidity, but humidity nonetheless.
Yeah.
So
like
New York. If you like, the fall was also spectacular last year. Was just the trees change colors and it had that smell that I missed.
That's
so
awesome.
Much. After all those years of not having that smell of fall, I guess it's dying leaves, but it really is. It brought back a lot of good memories as a young person. So
absolutely, foliage is beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. No, yeah. So you could come in the summer and have a really lovely time with a pool and have a summer vacation with warm weather, relatively cool nights. And then any time of the year is it's really been lovely. I can't complain weather-wise.
How about other costs like your internet, phone, cable, stuff like that?
So that's remarkably cheap. So I have an iPhone and I pay €9.99 a month for unlimited calls. Not only in France, but in like 100 different countries, including the United States. I can call the US. So unlimited text and calls, unlimited
data.
Unlimited data. $9.99. That's $10 for the phone. And then I have, and they have plenty of 5G. I mean, I am out in the country, so you will dip maybe down to 3G and 4G, but there's plenty of 5G network here. Probably not as much as the United States, but plenty, certainly in the cities and the towns. The internet in the house, they don't have fiber to this particular village. They're supposed to get it, but I don't know where or when. But I have a box from the same group that I have the phone through. It's called Free Mobile. And I have it's $29.99 for my internet, which is also unlimited. And that includes TV, which I don't use terribly often, but I do have all the channels, French channels, and there's some English channels. And then it includes a home phone, but I don't even know where to find a phone that I could plug in, but it includes it anyway. So for €30 a month, and the internet is perfectly fine. I can stream.
That's incredible.
I can stream Netflix and whatever streaming services. I can have these types of video calls.
Yeah, you're coming in great.
No, Zoom is fine. There's absolutely no problem with surfing the internet. For about $40, I've got a phone, internet, TV, and a house phone if I wanted to, and all unlimited.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. They should bring some of that here.
Yeah.
Okay. How about an arts and culture scene? What's that like? I mean, again, in a small town, you might be limited to arts and culture, but tell us a little bit about that.
So, well, specifically from an art perspective, you're going to find that even a lot of the smaller towns are going to have small galleries. They're going to have artisans, they're going to have potters, painters, because they either sell out of their shops in the towns or they sell at the markets. It's very, very common to see, maybe not so much painting, but you're going to find people that create, whether it's pottery, whether it's jewelry, you see a lot of that, clothes and bags, those types of things will be very common in the markets, and a lot of them are local. They make these things and sell them. So you're going to find, at least by me, so the big cities, the big towns or cities in Dordogne are Perigueux, which is the capital, if you will. They've got a great art community. There are galleries, there are shows, there's theater, plays, concerts, all of that. And that's about 20 minutes to the north of me. Bergerac is about 15 minutes to the south of me. They just had a big jazz festival last week. It was a five-day jazz fest out in the pavilions and the courtyards and in the concert halls. I don't know how many tens of thousands of people were there. They have those types of things in the area. Sarlat is about an hour from me, Sarlat, Canada, and that's got a big art scene as well. So I don't think if you're an artsy person, you're going to feel out of sorts. The really, really small towns, probably not so much, but, you know, even in Issy-Jacques, which is a small little town, you could walk through there and there are probably a dozen different small galleries where you could find all sorts of different types of artwork. So, and of course, Bordeaux is an hour by train or an hour. There's a motorway, which is, I guess, maybe you'd call it in the United States, maybe a tollway. So, you know, and I think it cost me maybe $8 in tolls, €8 in tolls to get to Bordeaux, but quickly. So within an hour and 15 minutes, I can get to Bordeaux. And Bordeaux is a UNESCO World Heritage Site. The entire city is a UNESCO World Heritage Site. The art is world class. The food is world class. The wine is everything.
How about theater? Can you see theater in Bordeaux?
Yeah, absolutely. They have everything.
Like live theater type Broadway stuff.
Well, I don't know if you're going to see Broadway type stuff, but you're going to see symphony. You're going to see They have a big concert arena, so you'll see all sorts of different artists come through. Big artists. Well, it just depends on what kind of music you like, but you can see all sorts of different international concerts will come through. Obviously, Paris is going to be the biggest to get the Beyoncés and you name all the big, Adele, right, or whatever that might be. Anybody who's like that. I know that Harry Styles is there next week, which is a big deal.
Wow.
In Paris. But I don't know, I'm trying to think, I've got friends that are going to see Peter Gabriel in Bordeaux coming up in a month. And it's pretty good. Pretty big.
That's artist. Not
so,
bad.
Yeah. So they get all sorts of artists to come there. So I would say that the art scene is really great in the area itself. Yeah.
That's great. Just so you're not missing any of that. So that's wonderful. And I'm trying to picture. So of course, in a rural area, you need a car, and
yes, absolutely.
Gas is probably a little bit more expensive there.
Gas is expensive. I pay about, well, right now it's under €2 a liter. So there's 4 liters to a gallon.
In a gallon.
So it's about $8 a gallon of gas. Yeah. In the summer, now a couple of things with petrol here. They have a lot of diesel cars, and that's cheaper. Mm-hmm. However, they don't like the diesel cars in the cities, so it's almost impossible for you to bring your diesel car into Center City. So they want you to have a petrol car if you come into the cities, the bigger cities. So that's one thing. The second thing is that the prices don't fluctuate like they do in the United States. One day it's $2 in the United States, the next day it's $3, the next day it's $4.
Right.
No. It stays very, very consistent. And then they will tell you on June 1st, we're dropping the petrol down from €1.80 to €1.30. And it's going to be like that for 30. It'll be like that for 30 days. They will tell you that you know that they're doing it. And they did it last year. They did it in the summer, and it was longer than 30 days. I forget how long it was, maybe 2 months. They dropped it down, and it's advertised, and it stays that way. And then on a certain day, it's going up to this amount. It's going back up to €1.65 or whatever it might be, and that's what it goes to on that date. So there's no guessing, which is kind of nice. But it's still expensive.
Expensive, yeah. Right. But yeah, at least there's no surprises. Here, there's always a surprise. I look around and I'm like, oh my God, over $5 for a gallon now?
Yeah.
Is that Phoenix what it is? Is Phoenix? Expensive.
Yeah, okay.
Phoenix is expensive. Yeah, yeah, it's just about the five, a little bit more.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It depends. It fluctuates to the fours, to the, to the fives. But okay. And I would assume in the bigger cities like Paris and Bordeaux, there are probably communities within the city where they're walkable if you live there.
Absolutely.
Is that true?
Bordeaux is a great city. First, it's got an international airport, but it also has a fantastic tram system. So you can Bordeaux center is quite nice and large, but then I don't want to say they're suburbs because they're certainly city. But there are cities that surround it, Marignac, Pessac. I mean, I can name a whole bunch of them. And they have their own individual center city, if you will. So you can live out. Like I went for a lunch with some friends in Bordeaux this past week. And my friend lives in Valmont. So he has a parking space. Great, because not all places will have a parking space. So I went to his flat, parked my car. And then a block away was the tram. So then we took the tram into Bordeaux and went up to Marignac, which is one of these sort of fringe cities. And they have a beautiful downtown area, small, walkable, but with everything that you possibly need. So if you want to live in Bordeaux proper and have all of what Bordeaux gives you, but maybe not live right in the middle of all of everything, which can be very, very busy, you can live a 10-minute tram ride to Mérignac or Pessac or Talence or any of these other places and find maybe cheaper accommodation, a cheaper flat, maybe even a house with a little garden, which would be nice, maybe a place that has a parking space, and then just take the tram into the city whenever you need to work or you want to go for maybe a dinner or a show or, you know, whatever it might be, shopping. So there are plenty of things on the outskirts of a town like Bordeaux. Certainly the same with Paris or any of the other bigger cities.
So even those outskirt communities, are they walkable? Like, in yes. other words, if you live there, can you walk to the market? Can yes. you walk to the pharmacy and stuff like that?
You can. Yeah. You might, I mean, you might walk a little further, but they're all going to be off of a tram line, which makes them walkable. You know, you might have to walk, maybe it's a quarter mile to the tram, but in between there's in those smaller cities on the outside, they're going to get the right. tram that goes out there. And then you might have to walk several blocks or a quarter mile or whatever it might be to where your house is because it's a little less congested.
Right.
Most people don't have okay. cars. They wouldn't want to have a car out there.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what I'm all for, going to a place where I don't need a car.
Yeah.
So that's important. How about being a foodie? Are you a foodie? And what's the restaurant scene like?
Interesting. I wouldn't consider myself a foodie. I'm a vegetarian. I've been a vegetarian for almost 30 years. And I'd say that the French are probably behind most other places on embracing vegetarianism.
Yeah.
So I obviously, I've got
you
friends.
Struggle.
Well, no, I don't struggle because I like to cook. And you can find plenty of vegetarian options in the markets. When you go to a restaurant, there might not be as many options for you at the restaurant. Mm-hmm. But, you know, this area of the Dordogne is famous for its strawberries. So the strawberries are like the greatest strawberries you'll ever eat, ever. Mm-hmm. Right now, they're like pieces of candy. They're lovely.
Yeah.
And obviously, my friends, I've got friends who are foodies, and they rave about the restaurants and the, you know, the cheeses and the meats and the, you name it. It's world renowned. You can find Michelin star restaurants mm-hmm. in smaller towns and villages that are very popular. And you think, my goodness, a world renowned chef is in this small little town of 1,000 people. Well, that's where he grew up and he brought back his, you know, or her.
How about in your town?
There are no services in my little town. Beauregard-Bissac is just homes. There is, of course, a cathedral because there's always going to be a church. Mm-hmm. But the town of Vert, which is V-E-R-G-T, it's pronounced Vert, is maybe 2 or 3 miles down the road, which has everything you need. It has pharmacies and doctors and supermarkets and the veterinarian for the dog and a groomer. And so it's only a few miles down the road. And of
right.
course,
restaurants,
restaurants, cafes, a weekly market. Yeah, no, it's a nice little town.
Yeah. Sounds lovely. So public transportation, how do you get to like a train? You have to drive, of course, right?
Yeah, so I would have to, from where I am, I'd have to drive. It's about 15 minutes to the Bergerac train. Perigou and Bergerac, they have a bus system within the towns, the cities, but no tram, no electric cars. But the train to Bordeaux and to further out east to Cerlat run through. So, yeah, I mean, like any place else, they have a park and ride. You drive your car down, you park your car, you take the train into Bordeaux for the day. I could bring the dog on the train, no problem.
That's great.
Yeah, you could go in and have lunch and maybe, you know, because it's France, you maybe share a bottle of Tour Rosé while you're at lunch and take the train back and have time to, you know, an hour to relax. And then, you know, by the time you get back, you're fine. You can drive to your house. So it's not been a problem. And of course, in any of the bigger cities, they're going to have buses and trams that will take you all over the cities, all over.
How about, what's the minute drive? How many minutes to your train station if you drive from your home?
Not even 15 minutes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, 12, 15 minutes. It's about 10 miles from my house to the train station in Bergerac. So it depends, maybe if there's a, because it's a one lane road, so there could be a truck, you know, that's slow, but it's 10 miles. It's not far.
So you just mentioned wine. That reminds me. I like wine, and
I do too.
France is known for their wine, and it's pretty affordable, I would assume.
Oh my God.
Because I know Spain, it's like cheaper than water.
Mark, it's a problem. It's a problem how it's a problem how cheap it is when you go to the grocery store and there is really, really, really good local wine for like €3.
It's unbelievable.
For basically $3, you can get, and not just, oh, there's one, no. The entire, you know, display of wines. I mean, maybe they would go up to €10 at the most, but it's, and then if you go to the markets, you know, you can, which is one of my favorite activities. You go to the market, there's always going to be people selling wine, so you can have a taste. And then you pick up a bottle and it's €5 from the vineyard that is literally down the road, which I like to do. You know, I like to support the local economy and go to the markets and the vineyards. So, but if you go to a Lidl, which is L-I-D-L, which is the German supermarket chain, which is prevalent here, or any of the supermarkets, you can find very, very good, inexpensive wine. Yeah.
And my God, you're so close to Bordeaux.
Well, everything, yes.
It's just known for wine.
Yes, the whole area. And that's the thing, too. You could go to any of the vineyards. You can, if you find the wine in the store and it's, oh, you know what? I passed this vineyard maybe a week or so ago driving somewhere. And then you could go and go have a taste there or have a lunch or whatever. You know, it's lovely.
I think I would have myself... I don't know. I'd be drinking wine all the time instead of water.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that. There's a joke that, you know, here in France, you know, you go and you have lunch and someone says, you're drinking at lunch? It's noon. You say, I'm not drinking. It's wine. It's very, very common, and nobody would ever bat an eye at having a glass of rosé at lunch.
I've even heard, like in Spain, people have breakfast and have beer.
You see them. You see them in the markets more so.
Yeah.
I certainly don't. But if you go to a market and it's 10 o'clock, 9:30 or 10 o'clock,
right?
The cafes will be filled with people drinking beer and wine.
To me, it's crazy.
Well, the thing is, and what I love about France is they really take their private, personal, family time very seriously. And so the market is a day, mostly in the morning, to go with your family and friends and enjoy, go get the ingredients for the dinner or the lunch, your cheese, your meats, your veg, whatever you're going to get, and stop in the cafe and have coffee or wine and sit and actually talk to people and don't look at your phone
and relax
and just enjoy life. They are all about enjoying life. And it takes a while to get used to as an American, you know,
cause they're slower.
Things close from noon to two.
So they have siesta.
They don't call it siesta. It's just lunch. It's 2 hours.
Okay.
So but the idea of sitting at your desk like I used to do and shovel leftovers into my mouth because I had a thousand emails and the phones and all the people. No, the shop closes, the store closes at noon, and they will be back at two. I went to go buy a car on a Saturday, and the car dealership, the Toyota dealership, when I was up in Poitiers, was closed from 12 to 2 so they could have lunch.
Out to lunch.
And I thought, could you imagine in Phoenix, going to a car dealership at noon on a Saturday, and it's closed for lunch, they'd riot in the streets.
They would.
but you have to get used to that sort of thing. Like, oh, I need something. I'm going to go to something that's maybe equivalent to a Home Depot or, you know, like a home store. And you're like, oh, I've got to go and do that on Saturday. Oh, it's closed from 12 to 2. On Sunday, it's closed.
Closed totally.
Closed. Yes. No, closed. You might get the supermarket open from maybe 9 to 12 in a bigger. And we're talking about smaller towns and cities. In the bigger city, Paris, things don't close down. But out here, Sunday, no, nothing's open.
Oh, everything in Europe is pretty much closed. Spain is the same way.
Very, very important to them. And they won't give it up. They'll never give that up.
Yep. I can't blame them. I mean, that's the way it is. It's their culture. I kind of like that culture. I hope you're adjusting to that.
Absolutely. 1,000%.
So how about crime? Is there such thing? I know there's guns are not allowed, right?
The guns are allowed, but they're highly, highly regulated. You can't just go into a store and buy a gun.
And buy a gun.
Right. Hunt, because hunting is a big deal. They love to hunt. And so you see the hunters out during hunting season. I mean, of course, crime, you know, it is Europe. So there's going to be petty crime and that sort of thing in the cities. Watch your wallet on the tram, you know, or walking through markets and things like that. That's just plain and simple. Be aware of things. But by me, I would be so surprised.
You could probably leave your door open and no one would bat an eye.
I do because I have the dog. And so I bought some hanging screens because they don't do screen doors here. That's one thing that drives me crazy. But I bought some hanging screen doors. And I'll go to the gym or go somewhere, and if I can't bring the dog and it's nice out, I will leave that open so he can go in the garden. And I don't feel even remotely worried about the door being open. Now, I do have a fenced-in garden, but no, I certainly don't want to learn a lesson one day, but I never feel unsafe. And one of the things that I tell friends who are European, the one thing that I don't do here that I did in the United States is I do not go into a restaurant or a shop and immediately look for where the exits are. You know, in the United States, I started doing this thing where I didn't want to have my back to the door. I want to know where the exits are. I'm looking at people and at first I thought, you know, that's paranoia, Kevin, just stop that. But you know what? It's really just not anymore.
It's not.
It doesn't. It's so not anymore. I don't have that feeling here, and that's a nice feeling. It really is.
Yeah. I mean, I have the same feeling when I'm going shopping or I'm going to the market, you know, I'm in Safeway and I'm like, oh,
well, especially in Arizona with an open carry. I lived in the north part of Phoenix near to like Desert Hills and, I can't remember what's above Desert Hills, but anyway, county land. So it wasn't surprising to see someone at the Safeway with a machine gun type of gun, not a handgun on their hip, like a big gun, which I always found it,
that's disturbing.
It was disconcerting for me. I'm not going to get into a political debate about guns and ownership. That's not what this is for. But I was never comfortable with that. I'd never felt comfortable in situations such as that. And that's just something that you don't get here. You would never get that here. Yeah.
That's a big thing. Yeah. It's something. Yeah, it's really nice not to look over your shoulder or feel threatened.
Yeah.
So. That's important. So, okay. So crime is pretty much non-existent.
I mean, if you go into Bordeaux, sure, there might be, you know.
Petty theft.
I would assume that cars get stolen or broken into from time to time.
Right.
vandalism with kids and things like that, but there's not a
violent crime.
It doesn't. I mean, I don't pay too much attention to the news anymore, and I try not to. Mm-hmm. But there's just not a lot of it.
Smart.
It's certainly not in the same realm as the United States. It just doesn't compare. I'm not going to say that crime doesn't exist here, because it certainly does. And you're going to go to Paris, mm-hmm. you're going to go to Bordeaux, you're going to go to Marseille.
Right.
There, you're going to lock your doors. Lock your car.
Yep.
Don't leave things in your car.
Right. Don't leave your car door open.
Right. In tourist areas, that's just common sense, because there are opportunistic people that will take advantage of that. Of course they will.
Sure. Sure.
But I haven't had a worry about it since I've been here in the last year.
Great. So Kevin, tell us about healthcare.
Healthcare.
How it compares to the U.S. Tell us about the public and private systems. Also, we'd like to talk about the visa process also.
Okay.
So we'll get to that, but tell us a little bit about healthcare. How does that work?
Great. So the healthcare is great here in France. I am a visa holder with resident permit. So once you are a resident of France, you can apply for and receive healthcare. It's called a carte vitale, and it provides you with a 70% coverage to your healthcare. What that means is, well, first of all, I don't pay into the healthcare system. After 3 months, I applied. I showed them my visa, and they gave me a little card for my wallet with my picture. I sent them a picture of me on their system, and I got a card, carte vitale, and you attach it to your bank account, and you can then go to pharmacies and doctors, and when you go, they ask for your carte vitale. You pay a doctor 25 euro to visit in cash, typically cash, at least out in these smaller villages. And like the next day or maybe 2 days later, 70% of that 25 euro is back in your bank account. 17 euro, whatever that comes out to.
Wow.
So to see a primary care physician, you pay about 7 or 8 euro out of pocket. You can purchase what they call a mutuel, which would cover the other 30%. So it's just a private health coverage, which I've chosen at this point not to, but I have priced it out. I can get it for about 50 euro a month. So for about 600 euro a year, it would cover the other 30% in full. Now, granted, that 30% is, $8, €8, right? So, but it also would cover dental, total dental, and eyeglasses.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I really need to do it. I just haven't done it yet. So I can go to the doctor. I can get reimbursed the 70%. And then let's say I need a prescription for something. It's going to cost out of pocket maybe 2 euro or 3 euro to get some type of medication that you might need. And so, so 3 and 7, maybe 10 euro to go to the doctor. Let's say you have I got COVID last year, even though I had 4 shots, I still got COVID last year. And so I went the doctor gave me 2 prescriptions for whatever it was. And I think out the door, I was like 11 euro for everything.
So crazy.
So that's great. I don't pay into the system. There's no cost for me as a French.
That's unbelievable.
Resident. Now, the thing is that the French people do pay into the system. They pay into Social Security, right?
Right. So how do you not?
Well, because I'm semi-retired. I don't earn income here in France, and I pay taxes to the United States. There's no double taxation. So it's one of those, I don't know, glitches in their system that allows for foreign people who go through the proper protocols that get a visa, pay for the visa, which does cost some money to pay for, you know, to get the visa and go through the right process. And, you know, it's a universal healthcare system. They provide healthcare. So it's great. So really what it comes down to is I can get full total healthcare coverage in France for about 600 euro a year at my age at 53. And I don't have any pre-existing conditions. So that's pretty darn good compared to the tens of thousands that I used to spend on healthcare in the United States. I can't answer to I think as you get older, that price goes up. But it's still not. I've got a couple of friends, there's a couple that I know that are 60, I guess Patrice is 66, going to be 67, and Neil is 61, and they pay about 1,100 euro per year for their mutuel. And I know that Neil has got diabetes. So I don't, whatever he needs to take for that, I know that. So still, that's not bad for 1,100 for two men in their 60s. To have full healthcare coverage and it's good coverage. It's not, you know, they're good doctors. They're capable people. Right. They have, you know, I'm going to go to the dermatologist because I lived in Arizona for 20 years, so I've always got to get my skin checked. So I'll go.
Is there a long wait for the public system?
So for the I haven't had the need to go to specialists other than the dermatologist. And that was I'd say 2 or 2.5 months. But I thought, you know, I used to take me 3 months to get to see my dermatologist in Phoenix. So I didn't think that was that bad for about 2 or 2.5 months. But I'm going to assume that in the bigger cities and towns that it would be easier. My primary care physician, I got to see him right away. He lives in a small little town. He speaks some English, which is really nice. He actually speaks very good English. The gals at the front desk know, but the doctor did, and so we were able to get past that. But that I was able to go to see him within the week.
And how about hospitals?
Outside, hospitals? Perigueux's got a huge hospital. Bergerac's got a hospital. So there's not one. Vea doesn't have a hospital. They have, you know, they have like we would have in the United States, like a clinic, you know, like an urgent care, you know.
Urgent care.
Yeah. They'll have those types of little urgent care facilities with maybe two or three doctors in them. So if you've got the flu or maybe you hurt your hand, they might be able to do your X-ray there. And, you know, if you need a surgery, they're going to send you to the hospital. But that type of thing you could get done. Maybe a little local, and then anything else you would go to a bigger place.
You gave up your healthcare in the States, right?
My healthcare was through my employer.
Employer.
Yeah. Okay. And you have to, in order to obtain the visa to come to France, you have to purchase private healthcare insurance for the first year.
For the first year. Yeah. Same as Spain.
Yeah. So through... I think it was through AXA, which is a big international travel insurance company. And I forget what it was. Maybe it was like 300 or 400 euro for the year. And
not bad.
That was a little bit more. You could go anywhere and you just have to send all your bills to Belgium or wherever the home office was, and then they would reimburse you full.
Did it take a full year for you to get on their public system?
No, after 3 months. 3 months. You can apply. Wow. You have to validate your visa within 2 months. So within 60 days, you're required to validate the visa that you have received, which is just going online and paying a fee. And I'm here. I live in France, right? My visa is validated. And then after 90 days, so you validate the visa, and then 30 days later, you can apply for the health coverage.
Wow. And then 90 days.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Let's talk about visas.
Yeah, visa.
How do you go ahead and, you know, how do you apply for a visa? Do you do it in the States?
Yeah. So you have to do it in the United States. They farm it out, which a lot of the countries do. They farm it out to VSF Global, which is a third-party visa processing group. And so you have to apply at one of their handful of offices. It depends on which state you're in at the time. Then you could go to the office that serves that particular state. The one in Arizona is San Francisco. The one in we applied through Florida because the house in Arizona sold in one day and we weren't ready. So we ended up going to Florida, which actually turned out to be a good thing for a number of reasons. But so we were staying in Florida for a couple of months with family and applied through the Miami office. And so there's a bit of hoop jumping to go through. It's not terrible, but they're very, very specific about this the information that you need to provide, how it's provided, the order in which it's presented to them in person, down to the fact that don't put paper clips on it, you know, don't staple anything, these little tiny little things that seem strange. But you really just need to provide, you need to provide your passport. You need to show that you have a certain amount of, this is for a visitor visa. So my first year was a long stay visitor visa. You, Mark, can come to, or anybody can come from the United States to France for 90 days without a visa. I needed to get the visa for after the 90 days, and that's for a year. So from 90 days on to the year is a visitor visa. Non-working, no entrepreneur. I cannot take work, as they say in France. I needed to provide an attestation, which is a piece of paper that said that I would not work. I swear not to work when in France. So provide that. Your bank information that you have enough money to live in France that is equal to or more than their minimum wage, which is like 12 grand or something over the year. It's like $1,000 a month or something.
That's all you have to prove?
Yeah, yeah.
To have in the bank?
Yeah, yeah. So you just have to prove that you have per person.
Wow.
So, you know, you can put your, if you don't want to show them all of your bank accounts, you could open up one bank account and put $25,000 in it and say, here's my bank account. And that's perfectly fine with these people. And you need to provide a place to live. You have to show them that you have somewhere to live. Either someone's housing you or that you have bought something or you're renting something. And this is where it gets tricky because some of the VSF Global offices will accept a 3-month Airbnb. Some will expect a year lease. Mm-hmm. It just depends. There's no rhyme or reason. So you just have to figure that out. But the timing of everything and getting the visa can be very, very stressful because you need to get your appointment and you need to show them that you have a place to live. However, you haven't received your visa yet. And you might, what you're doing is you're buying a ticket to move to France. You're signing maybe, you know, Airbnb or signing a lease to stay somewhere, but you haven't gotten.
But you don't have your visa yet.
You haven't gotten the visa yet. Yes. It could be.
So it's like cat and mouse.
It's chicken and egg. Which do you first? Well,
right.
So you need to just breathe and understand, and then understand that the timing to take to get your visa back from VSF Global could take anywhere. Some hours took like 10 days. No problem, in and out.
Right.
I saw people online complaining it was 3 months. And they either had to change and cancel their flights, or they went all the way to Europe and just stayed on the 90-day visa and then flew all the way back to get their, you know, their visa done.
Visa, yeah.
You know, the thing is that if you've already gone to process the visa, like, okay, I'm sorry, they couldn't get the appointment for 3 months, so they went. If they get the appointment and go, you leave your passport with them so that you can't go anywhere.
Wow.
So you can't, you give them the passport because the first visa is attached to your passport. It's inside the passport. Mm-hmm. You get it back.
Right.
So some people who were having trouble getting the appointment just left and came back. Some people who gave them their passport, then they're stuck. They have to wait there. I saw on some of the Facebook groups for visas, people just stressing, my plane is leaving in 3 days. I haven't gotten my visa.
Visa, yeah. Yeah.
What do you do? So it's just one of those things that you have to just hope it goes well. But you don't need to do much in order to obtain the visa. Those are the handful of things that you need to get the visa.
Gotcha. That's great news. I mean, great information.
And I just renewed my visa online here in France. So the second year I just did it online, and I changed my status to an entrepreneur. So I can take work in France. I can create work in France. I can't take it. I couldn't work at a bank. You know, somebody can't hire me here, but I can create work. I can sell a service or a product.
So a little bit about taxes. Do they have like a wealth tax, or do they have inheritance taxes? Or I know income taxes, you mentioned you don't have to pay because you pay from the United States. But do you know if they have any wealth or inheritance tax?
I'm not completely familiar with that. I apologize. I should have gotten a little bit more information on that. The taxes situation can be very, very complicated. I would suggest that anybody,
a tax attorney,
would hire someone that knows both the French system and the US-based system. However, I filed a tax return in France, even though I did not earn any money in France. You are still required to file, and didn't pay anything. So I hired a local firm here to do it for me. And I had to provide every bank account, foreign bank account, the bank, where the bank, what bank it was, the account number, and the amount at the time. If you don't, there's a 1,200, 1,500 euro fine for not disclosing your bank accounts. So you just do that, but you don't pay anything. It just shows you have the money. It's in this US-based bank account. I made money in 2022 in the United States, so I showed that W-2 and a 1099. I showed those forms to them, and it was filed. And then I'll just pay. And then there's an automatic 2-month extension for expats when you live out of the country. So I didn't have to file my tax return on April, whatever it was, 18th. It does not forgive you from paying taxes, though, on April the 18th. So if you have to pay tax, then you need to do that on the day the taxes are due, but you don't have to file until later on. Automatically 2 months, and then you could get a 6-month extension to October just by going on to irs.gov and asking them to do that. If you need an extension.
Understood. So are there any cons of living so far in Dordogne and France in general? Do you miss anything?
No, I can't say. I really can't say that. I mean, maybe a really good bagel, you know, if I'm getting down to it. You know, like from a food perspective, I love a dill pickle, and you just can't get a dill pickle here.
Really?
Well, they put those little cocktail onions in there with them. So it really changes I haven't found a good dill pickle. But no, you know what? I've really, you know, even with the language challenges, it hasn't diminished my enjoyment. I really it's the best move I ever made. It really, really is. I am so grateful to have done it. It's not easy. Moving out of the country is not for the faint at heart. There are challenges. There's bureaucracy. You know, all my family is back either the East Coast, and then I have a lot of friends that are, you're 9 hours from me. So I've got friends in Phoenix that it's hard to keep the relationships.
Right.
Not active, but
exactly.
Present, like live, because they're going to bed when I'm getting up and all these sorts of things. So that does create some challenges, but it hasn't diminished anything. But no, I've adapted to a different way of life, and that's what I wanted. I wanted to live differently from a sort of like an emotional, spiritual, and I'm not saying religious. I'm talking about just how I live life. And I've slowed down immensely, and I don't have the same levels of anxiety that I used to have. And that is sort of an immeasurable asset in my life. So I couldn't be happier.
Right.
You know, shoot, if I can't get a good bagel and a dill pickle, I can live. I can live without that. Shoot. I mean, you know what? You can get Amazon here, you can get Netflix. Yep. I mean, you can, if you're missing your favorite shows, you'll find them somehow. And I am a sports guy. So I do, if there was one thing the sports are usually on in the middle of the night here. So I have to catch replays but that's also fine. It's not the end of the world if they're on one of the streaming platforms, but really no, there's nothing that I mean, my mother, my mom, outside of, my family, but we do this, we video chat. I probably in more touch with them now than I was in Phoenix. Yeah. Because I send videos, pictures when I'm out and about and look at this. And then we have chats online. And so it really,
we're still in
the East Coast is a little bit.
Do you think you've gone through any culture shock? Yeah. Like just the differences in culture and
culture shock. Well, I think so. I think that's inevitable. Mm-hmm. Like again, we talked about shops being closed, or they smoke more here than they do in the United States, but they don't smoke inside, so that's not a problem. Culture shock. Yeah, I mean, outside of really just this live to live attitude as opposed to the live to work attitude. Is sort of a culture shock. It really is. You have to get your mind around it. It's funny. I had a friend who lives in Spain with his husband. They run a cafe down there in Rota, but he has a flat in Bordeaux and his mom is up here in Bordeaux. And so we get together when he comes in town. He said, I'm having a lunch on Wednesday. Do you want to come and visit? And we'll go to this lunch with all these people. And I said, perfect. And so I drove in and we had all this stuff. We were going to the lunch, and I said, "Well, what's the occasion? It's Wednesday, and we've got like three bottles of rosé. We have got all this food." And he said, "Well, what do you mean?" He's French.
Is it someone's anniversary?
I said, "What's
birthday?
A Wednesday?
It's like, just Wednesday.
Is there something going on?" And he said, "No. It was nothing. It was just a bunch of people that wanted to get together, and they were able to do it on Wednesday, and I was there I don't know, 12 noon to 4 o'clock. It was 4 hours, and it was food, and it was wine, and it was people were laughing, and I followed it as well as I could, the conversation, because they were all French. But it was a lovely
You don't
afternoon.
Normally do it here.
And it's just not something that, – exactly. That's culture shock to me because – that would only be on a Saturday,
right?
If it even happened, and everybody would have had, well, I can't go because my kids are doing this and I've got to go here and I'm working or whatever it might be. That is not the way that they do things here.
Okay.
Oh, and then maybe the other thing is they do love their protests. They love their protests. It's a rite of passage in France to say,
oh, yeah,
you know, Monsieur Mélenchon,
yeah,
you want to raise the retirement age, which he did from 62 to 64. And I had people say, people were, oh, my God, Kevin, they're rioting in the streets.
In
I said, no, they're rioting in Paris because that's what they do. I said, I was in Périgueux and they were walking in the street with music. There was not
protest.
It was almost like a parade. It wasn't it didn't seem to me like a protest. They were very, very cordial. The police were there. There was no, I never felt at all unsafe. There was no hooliganism. Yes, that does happen in Paris from time to time. And of course it gets on the news that, it's burning. Yeah. But for really anything, they'll go to the end of the street. They'll say, no, we don't agree with that. And they will do it and do it and do it. And if you go to a lunch or a weekend and you have French people there, they are very political. They are not shy about expressing their political opinions. And that's been very, very interesting for me to hear not only their political opinions for France, but for the United States and the UK. Ooh, you get a French guy, an English guy, and an American guy together.
Yeah,
with a bottle of wine and start talking politics.
So, Kevin, in wrapping up, what would you say to our audience if they're thinking of relocating to France or Dordogne?
Move to France. I would say I'm kidding, but only slightly. I would say that if it's possible to move abroad, meaning you have your life together, however it is. You don't have, don't leave your kids with your parents or whatever it is. You know, it's a scary thing, but I would take the leap. You know, looking back, most people would say, oh, you're brave or how fun and adventurous. Most people said you're crazy. What are you doing? You sold everything, the house, the car, all my stuff, or I gave it all away. And that was very stressful to give away stuff. But what after I gave it up or sold it, but most of it I gave away, there was a freedom that I hadn't had in a long, long time. I came here with, I've got some things in storage of my mother's garage, but not a lot.
Yeah.
Maybe two or three of those Costco bins, you know, that they have those big plastic tubs. And then I came here with three large suitcases and the dog. And all that stuff I don't miss. I don't miss the stuff. I don't miss the couch. I don't miss the lamps. I don't miss the pool table that we had. I don't miss the patio furniture. All those things that I was fretting about are in the rearview mirror. And I think it was a little crazy. I will admit that there is a little bit of crazy, but in order for you to really see an adventurous life,
right?
And I'm not talking about jumping off
life.
Of buildings and skydiving and those sort of things, but to really embrace a different way of life, you got to be a little crazy. You have to have a little bit of that in you. But I'm also immensely prepared in terms of, planning and researching. I didn't go into this haphazardly at all. And so, as long as you can do that, if you told me where 2 years ago, where I would be today, I'd say that is crazy. Because 2 years ago, I was still working. I hadn't quite quit the job, but I was thinking about it.
Pulled the plug and did it.
And then a year ago, I left, almost just over a year, and the year has been great, not without its challenges, but worth every single bit of effort, money, time, some heartache, some immensely satisfying and grateful things. And so
that's wonderful. Well, Kevin, thank you so much for being here, being part of the podcast. Your information was was excellent. I thoroughly enjoyed having you on the show. I learned a lot, and I know we're going to be in touch in the future.
Yeah. No, this was great. It was fun.
Take care.
Bye. Okay. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Where Do Gays Retire podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe to our podcast and consider making a donation by clicking the coffee cup on any page at www.wheredogaysretire.com. Each cup of coffee that you buy costs $5 and goes towards helping us continue the podcast. Thank you for your continued support.